Welcome to the Remix My Fitness podcast, where we learn that there's more than one way to eat, train, and live. I'm your host, Jimmy Kim, and if this is your first time checking out the show, welcome, and thank you for tuning in. Every week, I interview people from all walks of life who I think that are doing fitness the right way. We just celebrated Canada's Day here, which means that school is out and the summer is beginning for many kids and adults. And for many of us with children, we try and find activities that will keep them busy or go on family vacations or send them to camps. And on today's show, I'll be speaking with Ellen Howard, owner and director of Zodiac Swim School and Camp, and an overnight camp called Camp Tamarack. Ellen took her passion and knowledge of swimming and started Zodiac Swim School at the age of 17. 40 years later, Zodiac Swim School and Camp has been one of the premier places to teach children and adults the right way to swim. And I've learned so much from this episode after speaking with Ellen. I've taught many children martial arts over the years, and even though it's not the same activity, the approach, the mindset, and the patience required is still the same. I took down so many notes while she was speaking so that I could use it for the next time. We'll be covering topics from why swimming is a life skill, what the definition of a winner is, why so many adults are scared to swim, and why so many of them are actually coming back to swim, tips and tricks that will help parents teach their children how to swim, and so much more. But before I get into today's episode, I was so excited to see so many of you download the Remix My Fitness Bodyweight Benchmark Challenge. It was the same one that Dave Stewart did a few weeks ago. And if you've been following Dave's online coaching story through the podcast, you know we've hit such a critical point in his training. Dave had a goal to run a race, but an injury has put a little hole on his running plans. Check out this week's episode with Dave to see if he's recovered or whether we need to scrap the whole race idea altogether. Dave is still training though and doing his bodyweight workouts despite his injury. And just like I did with the challenge, I'll be sharing Dave's first bodyweight workout on remixmyfitness.com. So just go, sign up, and you'll receive the workout for free. But just like I did a few weeks ago, I'll only be making it available for a week. So I just released the latest episode with Dave last Thursday, so this means that you only have 4 days to get it before it's gone. Don't forget to share your results with me in our Facebook community page, which you can find on bit.ly/remixbyfitness.com. That link will take you directly to our private Facebook community page where we all share tips, hold each other accountable, and I provide exclusive content for our community. So that's it from me. Now let's get on to the show with Ellen.
Hi, Ellen. Are you on the line?
I'm on the line. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm great. And you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I know we talked briefly off air and kind of got caught up. So it's great to hear that things are going well. And why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me. And in terms of myself, I've been in business for almost 40 years. I started Zodiac Swim School when I was in high school, so everybody can do the math. And swimming has always been a passion and a love. And, you know, when you turn 16, you start working. Well, we did anyways in my family. And I loved teaching and working with kids. And by the time a few years later rolled around, it was like, I think I can maybe do this better. And come from a family of entrepreneurs, and so my dad helped me figure out how to get a permit at a pool in the neighborhood. And in those days, we didn't have internet and cell phones. We had posters and markers and put up flyers around town and had half an hour full-time and 10 kids. And I hired a few of my friends who were also certified, and we taught swimming and took out some insurance. And 40 years later, we have a swim school that we believe has, you know, developed a really excellent reputation within the aquatic community and within the city of Toronto. We from there, and our love of kids, ended up, I guess, expanding, and it was a natural progression to run a day camp. Camping was also a huge part of my life, and we wanted to continue to expand our businesses and have opportunities for kids to do amazing things in the summer. And swimming, interesting enough, a lot of families, because they went to cottages or they went away or their kids went to camp, the swim school itself, you know, ended up being quieter in the summer, where it's very busy from September to June. So it was a natural progression to figure out a way to keep the swimming going, but also delve into camping, which is something, again, that we, when I say we, my husband and I at the time, when the camp developed, we were married and had a few kids, felt it was a natural progression. And business-wise, it was a great, I guess, what do you call it, a virtual integration to have kids have an opportunity to continue with the Zodiac experience for the summertime. And then as our family continued to grow and business continued to grow, my husband and I had always gone to overnight camp, and we loved it as well, and always had another dream to be able to run an overnight camp. And this summer will be 10 years where we will be running Camp Tamarack, which is a residential co-ed camp up in Muskoka. We purchased 1,100 acres 10 years ago. It was right before the economy crashed. It was perfect timing. So we've spent quite a bit of time, you know, regrowing and rebranding. And the camp is an amazing, exciting place to be, and again, offers another opportunity for our Zodiac families to have an opportunity to have an overnight experience and continue to grow with sort of the quality and experiences that we want to create.
So this, would you say swimming was a hobby that you were doing, or were you a competitive swimmer?
Great question. So I just learned to swim when I was really, really young. My parents felt it was a really important skill to have, and provided opportunities for me to swim leisurely and swim and take lessons. And then because I had gone to camp in the summertime, swimming was always part of camp. And as I continued to get older in high school, I did swim competitively in my high school. And then in university, I studied physical and health education, and I have a degree in that. And interesting enough, one of the reasons when I was looking to choose a university of where I wanted to go to and pursue phys ed, U of T, I knew, well, in my mind, I wasn't going to be on the varsity swim team, but I wanted to continue being involved in swimming and competitive swimming. And I ended up beating the coach of the women's varsity team at U of T.
Wow.
And really was quite interested in her philosophy and what she had to offer, and they were looking for a manager of the varsity swim team. And I thought, well, not only did I swim competitively in high school, but I managed the boys' high school swim team. So I kind of, now granted, varsity swim team at U of T is very different than high school.
Right.
But it was a way for me to continue to be involved in competitive swimming, learn something very different, but in an area that I still continue to love. And so I was the manager for the varsity swim team, for the women's varsity swim team in my first year at U of T, and it was a great experience. I still swim leisurely, and it's just a life skill. It's so important. It's one of my most favorite ways to exercise. So that's swimming in my life.
That's great. It's crazy how this with something like swimming has now turned into this business of yours.
Mm-hmm.
That's an amazing story. And if you can kind of share what was it about that philosophy of that coach that you really admired? Well, did you remember like one or two things about that?
Yeah, I mean, she got to know, you know, all of her swimmers really, really well from the perspective of being able to help them nurture their strengths to be a winner. And a winner didn't necessarily mean to win the event. It could be to beat your best, to make a better best time. It could be to be healthier. It could be to manage and be successful in school as well as physically being part of this team and this other family. She had an amazing, way of balancing her coaching style and making connection, being firm, but yet being there for her team. And I just, she was just really wonderful to get along with. She ended up being one of my professors for some of my classes in year two and three within the phys ed program. So I got a chance to really get to see her also outside of the swim team environment. And she just was very well respected and very well, she just loved what she did. She just loved it. She was there for all the right reasons. And she just was able to individualize and do what she needed to do for her swimmers. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, she sounds like a really great coach, and that, mm-hmm. that philosophy of being a winner and not necessarily winning every single mm-hmm. thing, that I think that's a great mindset to have.
Mm-hmm. It is, and I think, you know, as a parent, and my kids are 30, 27, and 23, when they were growing up, it was always something where, you know, if they played hockey or, you know, baseball or whatever they were doing, even if they, you know, came home and said, I had a test, I would always say, how did you do? I would never say, what did you get? Or did you win? I would always say, how did you do? And, you know, I wanted them to really reflect on how did they feel they did. And, you know, I really felt I did well, or I felt I nailed this, but I could have studied more on that. It was more for me as a parent to also help them self-reflect so that it wasn't, you know, stressing. It's the winning and the
getting the high marks.
The failing.
Yeah.
Even within the swim school, the philosophy that we have when the kids take levels is that their evaluation is progressive. Other than the higher levels where it is pass or fail, our learn to swim progressions, which we actually just developed our own after 39 years and taking the best from Red Cross and Lifesaving. But basically, the philosophy is progressive evaluation. And so when a student is able to meet the standard after demonstrating them three times, then they've completed that standard. And when they complete all the standards of a level, they complete the level. And we really move away from the pass or fail. And it's very hard when you're trying to educate parents, right, who mm-hmm. still have that mindset of, you know, my kid didn't pass a level, I'm spending so much money or whatever they're doing. So we're really trying to continue with that philosophy in everything that we do within our swimming, within our camp experience, and I certainly adopted that as a parent, and I found it to be very successful.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
And having 4 years of experience, I'm sure you learned a thing or two, right?
Just a thing or two, and I learned a lot about, before I had kids, the kind of parent I wanted to be, and as my kids continue to grow, and I still teach, and I still teach parent and taught Sunday mornings. My favorite to teach is infants in the water. I love the connection with the parents. I love educating them. I love, you know, showing them what their kids can actually do in the water and how to do it safely. And hopefully they carry that on, whether they go on a holiday or they, you know, have a cottage or whatever they do. And I've learned a lot. I don't know everything. I'm not the end all be all, but I definitely have learned a lot, and it has definitely helped me be a better parent, be a better, you know, employee, a team player. Yeah.
I can totally resonate with that because I'm just say relatively a new parent myself, mm-hmm. and I always had an idea of what kind of parent I was going to be, mm-hmm. and I do a lot of coaching, primarily adults, but I've had the opportunity to teach a lot of young people as well. And yeah, it turned out I'm not the parent that I thought I was going to be.
Yeah. In many ways, you know, I learned what I definitely didn't want to be, and that definitely helped. And it's just really interesting and fascinating to watch how parents interact with their kids. And, you know, you have sort of a structural class and who's going to be part of that and who's not. And, you know, it's not surprising when you see, you know, how the kids react and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So, yeah. And I love that part of it. I love it because it just helps me, again, reflect and say, okay, what do I need to do differently? How can I approach that parent and help them? And, you know, not all parents want that kind of guidance and help and information. That's a tricky navigation also when you're teaching and coaching. You know, not everybody is open to wanting to be better, you know, or know how to do things differently that might be more advantageous.
Right. I totally do that.
Yeah.
For sure. And I see that I mean, I'm sure you see that a lot with the kids, but I also see that with adults as well. That same mindset as well. So I do find it interesting. One of the reasons why I reached out to you is because you have all this experience and you've expanded your swim school to not just a swim school. You've done the day camp, and correct me if I'm wrong on any of these things. So you have the swim school, you went to the day camp, then you have camp, you have an overnight camp, and I believe also you also do daycare now as well?
Right. So actually with new laws that were coming down a few years ago, I don't think the government really decided to consult with the camping associations. They ended up changing some laws, and that kids who are under the age of 4, depending on the type of program they were going to be involved in the summer, it would have to be a daycare licensed program. And so for all the years that we ran our day camp, and it's going to 21 years, we always had kids who were between the ages of 2.5 and 4, and we did an amazing job. And in fact, our ratios were often much larger than what the government were requiring because of our membership to the Ontario Camps Association. But anyway, long story short, we felt that based on continuing to service those kids between 2.5 and 4, the only way to do that would be to get a daycare license. So last April, we got our daycare license, and this will be our second summer where we run a daycare in the same facility where we run our day camp, and that way we can service our kids between 2.5 and 4. And they get, we have to have our EC licensed instructors. We have to follow all of the rules and regulations of daycare, which is no problem. But the benefit of having that within the facility where we run our day camp is that we can have the experts that work with us during the day in our day camp. They can also help in the day camp, in the daycare program, but also the daycare kids get swimming once a day. So we can still offer them a Zodiac swim lesson, and not too many daycares have that opportunity and option. So we think that we are doing really a great job at that, and our daycare has expanded, and we're really, really excited.
That sounds really amazing, and I wish you all the best with that.
Thank you.
So my company is called Remix My Fitness, and part of that is the main reason why it's called that is because I really believe that different things work for different people, and whether that's for adults, and that goes with for kids as well. And my parents, they were always a big believer of putting me in two things when I was growing up. From the earliest that I can remember was martial arts and swimming. So you mentioned that swimming is a vital skill and something that's important to a life skill. Yeah, absolutely a life skill and something important to learn. Why do you feel that way?
On so many levels. First of all, it's a great benefit in terms of just from a health perspective. You're working on all aspects of your body to, continue your coordination progressions, everything from, whether it's kicking and paddling to breath control, which is amazing. So whether it's floating and holding your breath or whether it's swimming and exhaling and breath control, works your lungs and your heart, and your heart is a muscle, and we want to keep our heart growing and getting stronger. So so from a fitness perspective, there's so many aspects of just general movement that help to offering other opportunities where the fitness aspect using the water can, continue in different directions. So for example, even in our Learn to Swim program, progressions of swimming farther distances and swimming using different parts of your body, whether it's just starting with a glide to using your arms and now you're breathing, they're all increasing your overall strength and your lung capacity and your breath control. We also have opportunities for kids when they get to a certain level to take competitive swimming, actually. So they could continue to learn competitive swimming strokes and turns and starts, but also increase their fitness from whether it's a sprint versus a long distance type of swim. And then we also have opportunities for kids to become leaders in the aquatic environment by taking higher levels to become eventually instructors and lifeguards. And in all of those levels, there are fitness components. And so maintaining your fitness and your swimming is not only going to be good for your health, but should you down the road want to become an instructor or a lifeguard and have a part-time job or a full-time job, have this as part of your career, or just swim for fun, maintaining that ability to swim distances or sprints, they're going to creep up on you later on in these higher levels. And interesting, when you talked about teaching adults, I mean, the focus of our program in swimming is certainly kids, but our adult program has been growing. And interesting enough, we now have not only a basic learn to swim adult program, but we actually have a swim club for adults. So the adults are seeing the benefit of whether they're just training in general from a swimming perspective or they're training for a triathlon and they want the swimming components to be practiced and work with a coach to help them be more efficient. We're definitely seeing more adults coming back to swimming.
You've seen an increase in adults.
Yes.
Are these adults coming back to swimming? So they already know how to swim.
Some of them, many of them do. Some of them are learning to swim for the first time as adults. So we do have definitely a beginner adult program. The ones who are coming back to it are coming back to it because, one, they see the benefit of the fitness and they want to get back in to do that. They are doing it either isolating just swimming as the component they want to work on, or they're doing things like triathlons where swimming is one of the components. And so let me get in and swim, have a coach help me be as efficient as I can, and start to train for this triathlon. So that's becoming more popular.
I see. When you meet an adult who has had either little or no experience swimming, mm-hmm. why do you think that is? Like I mentioned, I grew up,
yep.
My parents drilling, you have to swim, and I'm not the greatest swimmer, but yep. I can hold my own if yep. I need to. What do you think is that one thing or two things?
Yeah, so it's usually one of sort of two reasons. Either they had a terrible experience when they were a child, and they became extremely fearful, and it's taken them a really, really long time to potentially get back on the bike and try it again. And so the fear of whatever might have happened when they were younger, possible drowning, possible bad experience, maybe forced to do something they didn't want to do and not ready to do it. Again, there could be lots of different reasons, but it has really taken a toll on them, and they've spent a long time avoiding water, avoiding taking lessons, not feeling that it's a trust factor. So if we can get them in the water and continue to build that, all comes down to that relationship again, that trust, then we've seen tremendous progress because they see that they're capable. Their mindset is different. I think once they can see and feel it and know that they can float and they're safe, then usually they start to take off really, really quickly because it's different teaching an adult than it is a child. So that could be one reason. Another reason is it could be multicultural from the perspective that they are here now and their culture was such that swimming was not available, accessible, or part of their growing up. And now they are in a place where swimming is becoming or has become very important, and therefore now it's accessible to them and they want to take advantage of that. And a third reason just could be potentially affordability and availability. Somebody grew up to a point where they just didn't have it available to them or nor the funds to take it. So those are sort of the main
three reasons.
Yeah.
Okay. So they've either had a terrible experience or some sort of cultural or religious reason, and then they're now here in Canada and they have access to pools and so forth, or it could be the affordability
yep.
or the funding of it.
Yeah.
Yep. Which actually leads me to the next question, which is, if I could share just a quick story.
Yeah.
My son is extremely introverted, as I have found. And whenever I kind of put him into different lessons when he was 2 years old, 3 years old, even when he was in daycare, I just found him to be very shy. So one of the things that my wife and I did, and mostly my wife actually, we have a pool downstairs in our condo, and she would just take him to the pool to get him comfortable. And every time she would take him, she would kind of expand his, I guess, experience. So first it was just us holding him, and then eventually got to him, you know, us holding him and a noodle, and then now him just using the noodle on his own.
Right.
We did this hoping that we can then take him to professionals where they can kind of show him the ropes a little bit more and kind of show him things outside of what we did.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened was we enrolled him in a program, just something across very close to us,
mm-hmm.
and he just refused to get into the pool. And the pool was only maybe like hip high to him. So there was no chance of him drowning. And mm-hmm. he just was kicking and screaming. And it was, I think, 6 weeks of it was just brutal. It was just brutal. What do you think that we did wrong? And for any other parents who are trying to teach their children, to swim on their own. Maybe they fall under one of these three categories that you mentioned. What do you think we could have done better, or what are some tips that you could give us?
Sorry, how old was he at the time when you did it?
He was three. He was three when we took him to the actual lesson.
But how old was he when you started taking him in the pool?
I think maybe like 1 year old or one and a half or so, yeah.
Well, I don't know that you necessarily did anything wrong, to be honest with you. I think that if you're asking me what are some other things you could have done maybe to help supplement, or if you did it again, would you do something differently? Because it sounds to me like you had the right intention of taking him in the water and exposing him to the water. The only thing is, if you and your wife are not, let's say, professional instructors of swimming, then the mere idea of like maybe how you were holding him, like I don't know how you were holding him, right? So because how you hold in the water is different than how you hold on the land. So maybe the comfort with all your best efforts of having him comfortable and then slowly moving away from just holding and then a noodle and all that stuff. I mean, you had the right idea, absolutely 100%. But maybe you guys as parents, knowing that you just wanted to go in your apartment pool or whatever, maybe you guys just needed someone to just make sure that they were showing you what to do when you wanted to do that on your own, that you were going about those steps or progressions using the proper technique, right? And that's what we do in our parent and talk class, is we teach the parents how to hold them, how to put them in this position versus that, and why a child might feel this position is more secure than another one, right? So your intentions were 100% correct. I think that the only thing maybe I would have done is maybe another interim step, and you're not going to know how your child is going to react until you expose them to something. So you, again, did everything you thought was the right progression to get him to a bigger pool or a louder pool. Some kids are definitely more sensitive to loud noises and to busyness. You also can look at the time of day that you enrolled. Maybe with all best intentions, you thought this was going to be a good time of day, but maybe it was too close or right after a nap. Maybe he was hungry. Maybe he didn't have a great sleep. So there are all these other factors that contribute why a child reacts a certain way, especially in the water, which is different than just going to a gym or a classroom, like to have an art class or music class or something. So the only other thing I might have done also is done an orientation to the facility, where instead of starting at a new facility in a lesson where it's structured and expectations are going to be expected, either asked to do an orientation where, you know, your son would just go, to try it out without being part of a class to see how he would react, or another idea would be for you guys to go to that pool, if that was an option, and I don't know, to swim around as a family, because again, it's a different pool than the pool in your apartment or wherever you were going, right? So it's not unusual that somebody would find new environments more challenging or whatever. If it's a swimming situation without seeing how he held you or reacted, it's hard to know if it's just I'm not comfortable or if there is potentially some fears. I don't like to label something a fear unless I see what a body language looks like, you know, or the heart is beating really hysterically and they're like scrunching your skin so tight that they won't let go. Because we all know that kids have different kinds of whines and cries and stuff like that, right? So I think that the intention of getting him back in the water and being part of water is really important. If you guys are going as a family, I would encourage you to keep doing that. You might want to look at a different kind of environment where maybe you could do a private lesson to get him over a hump where he's starting to trust someone else, and then you guys are still close by. That might be another next transition that I would go for based on what you're describing happened.
And those are some great tips that I'll have in my show notes that you can visit on my site. So is it possible then to teach without having to go to a professional? Maybe I just don't have access to it, or I don't have the ability to send. Or can parents teach children how to swim on their own, or can children learn on their own? Is that something that can happen?
It's a great, great question. I think it always could happen, and I think it depends on the kid, because, again, you could get a fearless child who wants to jump in all the time and loves to keep their head under the water and would rather be underwater. Like I have one in my I have a 2.5-year-old who just would prefer to be underwater all the time. So there's different aspects to teaching to swim. So could a parent take a child on a noodle and have them kick? Yeah, but noodles are iffy and not so stable. And if a parent doesn't know how to put them on the noodle properly, then you're causing more problems. I wouldn't use flutterboards because little kids, flutterboards are flat. Kids don't want to hold boards that are flat because their hands can't hold it, right? So you have to look at the type of equipment you have. A parent doesn't often hold a child correctly. So depending on how you're holding them, you may not be helping facilitate what you want to do. So is it possible? Yes, but a parent might just take a child and think, I just want to dunk them underwater, but not realizing that depending on how old they are, if water goes up their nose, that's going to cause them to be uncomfortable. How do you emphasize exhaling in the nose and not the mouth? Like, so I would really say that to go in the water and have families play and not have any expectations that you're actually teaching them to swim, but having them enjoy the water and practice bubbles and try to encourage putting your face in and kicking, 100% I would go with those parents to do things like that. But to actually swim, unless you have background in how to get them through that, you may be causing more concerns than you don't need to.
Okay. So that's
my
last
opinion.
Yeah. And your opinion is greatly appreciated with all your experience. Yeah. So which will lead me to my last question for now on teaching your child to swim. So which leads to, are there any big, like, do not do's? Because as I was teaching my son how to swim, or getting him at least comfortable with water,
amazing, which is great, and I encourage every parent to do that.
Right. But maybe there are some do nots, because this is what I thought. As I was doing this, my friends were saying, okay, no, don't do it that way. And they all have kids. And I'll preface the story by saying that they were always with their children, close to their children. They decided this was their old school. This is how you teach kids, and this is the old school way because it's the best way. And they just threw their kids into the pool to let them figure it out. How do you feel about that?
Well, I don't agree with it because I have yet to hear stories where by throwing their kids in the water, the majority of them have a great, wonderful experience versus not. But that's me, and I've been around this for a long time.
So you have also heard of this method,
or you've heard of other parents throwing them in. Yeah, I'll talk to parents, like, you know, older parents who say, oh, yeah, well, I learned to swim because my parents just threw me in the water, and it was sink or swim. Okay, well, okay, great. And then, oh, my parents threw me in the water, and it was sink or swim, and I started to drown, and I hated swimming for 40 years, and now I'm trying to learn to swim again. So you never know how it's going to go. It's not a 100% I'm going to throw my kid in, and my kid's going to be amazing and love water. Like, you never know how it's going to go. So I guess I would say to you is, number one, I would always, if your children are non-swimmers and they can't stand in the pool, you should always be arm's length away from your child. You should not, my professional and personal feeling about water wings is an absolute no. I am so totally against water wings. They promote a vertical position. They are not governmentally approved. And parents, I believe, too often than not, will put kids in water wings because they think that it's better to just, my kid can feel buoyant and float around and I don't need to hold them the whole time, and they'll become more independent. The problem is they become more independent maybe vertically. They never are encouraged to put their face in the water and blow bubbles. And when they then go to start to learn to swim, they're so used to being vertical that we find, and so used to bicycling their legs because of the vertical position, that it becomes harder for us to teach them to swim, trying to maintain straight leg kicks and to want to put their face in the water. Also, parents think if their kids are in the water wings, they can float around and they don't have to be arm's length away. And then they start to get distracted. And if they're in the backyard pool party and having a few beers, they're not watching their kid. And too many times do we find other problems happen with that. So if you're going to put your kid in the water and you don't want to hold them all the time, then you put them in a governmentally approved life jacket so that they can at least work on their back floats and their kicks and still get their exercise and be comfortable and feel the buoyancy of the water, as opposed to being vertical in the water. So an absolute no, in my professional opinion, is do not put them into water wings or water tubes or whatever else is out there. If you're going to use something buoyant, use a life jacket. And I would really keep encouraging kids to blow bubbles. And I wouldn't just take a kid and dunk them under. If you're going to put them under, if you are, then count 1, 2, 3 and try to make it as horizontal as possible, where you're bringing them towards you as opposed to going straight down. Because going straight down, if they don't have the breath control, water goes up their nose and they're going to feel really yucky, and that's not going to help them enjoy the water.
And that's an excellent tip. So do not use water wings.
Yes.
And don't just toss your kid into the water.
I would not, but I'm sure there's people out there who think it's the best thing ever.
Right. Okay. So I want to pivot here.
Yeah.
And talk about the other things that you do at Zodiac, because you do a lot of great things. And I'm a firm believer that you need to build the habits of physical activity and fitness, not just because you have to do it, but because you absolutely enjoy doing it. And I think you do a great job of that, because I've worked for you at your camp, and I was amazed at all the different programs that you had offered in your camp. So you have this thing called Mega Sports, where you introduce kids to all kinds of different sports, and you have archery, you had horseback riding. What made you come up with these things, or how did you come up with these kinds of programs?
Okay, well, so when I talked about how we started the camp 21 years ago, we always refer to our kids as being our in-house focus group. So when we started our camp, we wanted to fill a niche that was not being filled by day camps at the time. One, we were going to have Zodiac swimming as part of every child's camp experience, but we actually talked to our own kids, and then we also talked to families who came to the swim school, and the niche that needed to be filled was to offer specialty. And so when kids were coming to camp, instead of having a general camp program, we would have general for the younger kids to be exposed to everything we had to offer. But when they got to grade 1 or SK, they would have an opportunity to choose a focus area specialty program for that session. And so kids that were coming to our camp for more than one session could stick with mega sports, let's say, all summer. And there were some kids that always stuck with mega sports. But if you wanted that variety, it's like, oh, I'll go session 1 to mega sports, and I'll go on a family holiday, and then I'll come back and go to cooking in session 3. So there was something for everyone, and we really tried to have a wide variety of options. So whether it was sports-related, arts-related, and when I say arts, it could be creative arts, it could be theater arts. We had things that were explore and discovery. We now have a STEM program. So we were trying to meet the needs of what was happening within the community, with what was happening with kids as they were growing, what our families were telling us they would really love. And so we developed this program that had something for everyone, that was included swimming every day, and it included options to be exposed to other things in camp. So while you might focus on sports, you still were exposed to dance or drama or music. And sometimes it's like, wow, I didn't realize that was so fun. And then they might take that another time they come back to camp or the next summer. So that's kind of how that happened. And it's more and more camps now have those specialty options. And yeah, so that's where we're at.
So you must have seen a lot of things, a lot of programs kind of come and go.
Yeah.
What would you say were the main staple 3, other than swim? What would you say it with them?
Definitely sports, and definitely I would say that theater art was very a staple, and to the point where we actually started another company called Zodiactors, which is a performing arts after-school program that we're in some schools, and we put on performances. So that grew so much and was such a huge staple that we started, another outside of camp program. So sports and theater were really staples, and I would say that probably for many, many years, I would say, back in the day, we used to have court sports and land sports, and now it's mega sports.
So those 3, swim, just general sports that you call mega sports, mm-hmm. where they do all kinds of different stuff, mm-hmm. and theater.
Yeah, and I guess, the other one would be more science and technology. So we have that as our STEM program now. Science and technology was really has also been very popular.
Mm-hmm. And you guys have a pretty big dance program there, too. from what I remember.
Yeah,
right?
So I mean, again, dance was a specialty program in and of itself, and then now it's under the umbrella of theater arts.
So dance is part of theater
dance
arts.
Dance was
okay.
On its own, and again, each year we kind of evolve into some different pathways. So, you know, at one point in time, we might have had, let's say, 10 different specialties, whether it was, like you say, horseback riding. We had one where we actually drove them up to Orangeville and they got to water ski and wakeboard in a man-made lake. And we've had a whole variety. Cooking has been really popular, creative arts, so forth. And so now with the daycare growing and changing sites, you've been at the latest site, and a lot of the older kids going to overnight camp and not sticking around for day camp, we've done more of a specialty focus as opposed to individual specialty. So dance and music and drama and karaoke might be under one umbrella, and mega sports is still its own umbrella, and then science and technology is one umbrella, and things like outdoor adventure, which would be orienteering and camp craft and learning about nature and the environment, would be like another focus.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's in combination of our own focus groups of reaching out to our families, reaching out to our kids, seeing what people are picking, seeing what they're interested in doing. Yeah.
Okay. So this question is a two-part question here, which is now that you have all these activities, would you say that certain activities lean towards more boys, certain activities lead to more girls, and over the years has this ratio changed a little bit? Because I know when I went to camp, it was my parents put me into something where it's more sports related. And with my sister, it was a little bit more, I guess, theater related,
right?
if I can put it that way.
For sure.
Yeah.
So back in the day when we started, when we did, and we only had six specialties in our very first summer 21 years ago, we had a mix where we thought, and again, through our focus groups and our questions that we asked, we thought probably, you know, this would be more likely for boys and this would be more likely for girls. So whether it was basketball, I think at the time we started with not mega sports, and we had creativity and we had science and we had, we had inline skating. So we kind of had six where we thought maybe three would be more boys, three would be girls, but anybody could take. And so definitely over 21 years, I can tell you that while originally something like sports was more boy, more male-oriented, and we might, out of 60 kids who would pick sports, maybe 40 would be boys and 20 would be girls, which is still a great ratio, I would say that now it's almost 50-50 in sports, which is fantastic. And definitely theater arts and creative arts were definitely more female-oriented from who picked it. We would still get a few males in there, and now it's still more female-oriented, but more males are joining it. So that's a great thing. So we're definitely seeing a change, and that we're trying to pick focuses which definitely are getting more of a balance of boys and girls, and one is not one-sided, even mega sports.
And do you feel that the shift has happened because it's just there's more information out there now? There's like social media, there's regular media that's out there just pushing that girls just don't have to do this and boys just don't have to do that? Or is it something that parents are coming in and they want their kids to experience everything?
Yeah, I think social media probably, I mean, again, probably is definitely a factor. I think that schools themselves are incorporating programs in schools that are pushing for more boys and girls to take at the same time, and therefore that contributing in a positive way to, oh, this was available at lunchtime, you know, science, and everybody's going. It's not just boys or girls, so I'm going to take science in the summertime. You know, I want to focus on science. Obviously, technology is huge. It's everywhere, so no bars. I mean, boys and girls are taking technology. Like, they're just, everybody's on it, right? They all want to know more on what to do. So I definitely think the parents are seeing the benefits, and that it's not generalized, male and female. And I think that I think schools are definitely contributing to that. And just kids are just more interested in a whole bunch of different things. It's not, you got to keep up with it. Like, there's just so much out there. and and everybody's into everything. I think you're seeing more female role models out there that would do things that might not have been traditional females. And whether that's on the social media, that's shows on TV. And there's more working parents that are, I think, are just generating a different kind of philosophy also.
Right. How do you feel about phones being accessible, or I guess teens and children having access to phones now? You have a lot of counselors in training, and you have a lot of counselors who are in their teams, and I'm sure they carry a cell phone. It's a problem. Okay.
It's a huge problem. Listen, I see the benefits of phones, and even when my kids were younger, my kids would take the TTC home from school. We didn't have carpools, and so for me as a parent, knowing that they had a phone and that they could have it as a backup in emergency situation because they were taking public transportation, I felt better about that. There's no question about it. I see absolutely the benefits of phones, but I can tell you in all of our camps, especially our overnight camp where kids who are on their phones constantly for 10 months of the year, one amazing benefit of an overnight camp anyways is that they can be disconnected. And we tell them, and they have to sign a code of conduct, that they have to leave their phones at home. Well, they don't. So they'll hide them. They'll bury them. They'll do a whole bunch of things to them. And so that becomes a different kind of policing that we really wish we didn't have to do. And the social media part also becomes something after camp is over, that they'll have a picture that they might have had camp, and they'll post it, and they'll say something nasty, or they'll post inappropriate pictures and send them to people they shouldn't be sending them to, and that becomes an issue. And then because it happens where maybe the picture or the relationship started at camp, you know, overnight camps they can't wash their hands of it anymore. So that becomes a different kind of scenario we're dealing with. But in terms of our staff, when our staff come to our day camp, they need to put their phones in their locker and lock them away. It's very hard for them to do it. Can you imagine? They can't be on their phone for 8 hours. And even at lunch, when they're supervising their kids, we don't allow them to take their phones to lunch because they're supervising their kids. So we post that the policy is this. We even in our interview tell them that they can't have their phone during the day. Are you on board with that? And there are people that will not take a camp job because they cannot be without their phone during the day. And they will admittedly say, this camp sounds amazing, I'd love this job, but there's no way I'm being without my phone for 8 hours. So it's a problem.
And have you noticed over the years, maybe it's phone related or not, but have you noticed that kids are a little less physically active now than they were?
100%. 100%. And I'll even talk to parents in my parent and talk class, you know, and granted, these are babies and under the age of 3, so they're really busy. Right. But then you get the older kids that are coming to take their advanced leadership and stuff. And it's like, oh, my mother's making me do it. My father's making me do it. It's like, I don't want to do it. And then fewer people are out there to hire to be the staff that you want to have the job. So it has a ripple effect in terms of they'd rather be on their phone. And when I talk to colleagues in the workforce, less and less people are taking jobs. And we all believe that one factor could be they will not disconnect from a phone to take a job that will require them not to be on their phone where they have to interact. So we definitely see that. And the kids that come to camp, I know they're diehards. They'll say, I can't wait to come, especially overnight camp. I'm crossing the dates off on the calendar. And their parents will say to us, like, we cannot wait for them to get disconnected to go to camp, so they're going to learn how to make eye contact again and actually talk to a person. But yet they'll break the code of conduct and bring the phone and it's just sufficient.
But you do what you can, and I mean, at least you're giving them some time off the phone, right? Especially that overnight camp, right? So you do what you can. Because the reason why I ask that is because I run when I do coaching, I run a benchmark test of a few exercises. And I have noticed, I've been doing this for 8 years now, I've noticed a significant drop in the general population of people that come and see me that are able to reach certain benchmarks. For example, like a plank. 8 years ago, I had people planking for 45 seconds, 1 minute,
right?
No problem. And now they can barely get to 30 seconds.
Really interesting. I bet you if you put your phone, sometimes when I've planked and I've had to time myself, I'll put my phone like under my face, right? Because I'm looking at the time. I bet you if you put your phone under them when they plank, maybe they'll be have an incentive of staying longer. Even though you
right.
don't want them to be looking at the phone. But that's really interesting.
Yeah, and which it just you know, again, one of the main reasons I want to talk to you because I want to get kids out there more active,
right.
and providing like the services that you provide is amazing. You have so many different ways that you can go about doing this, and obviously I think someone like you and I we're losing the battle a little bit on screen time, but you know, with people like yourself out there trying to make a difference, I think that's huge. I think that's huge.
Well,
and
we're trying, but it is a big battle in all different ways. Yeah.
For sure. So with all the things that you've seen, and I know you work closely with a lot of teachers and,
mm-hmm.
and principals and so forth, what do you think are some tips that you can give parents on getting their children a little bit more active or giving them some tips to kind of get away from the screen time?
Definitely. Even like the walk and the bike, right? Like just going to the park. I mean, part of it is also everybody's unfortunately texting. It's like they won't pick up the phone anymore. What are you doing? What like they don't even know how to have a conversation. But the more that you can be a role model for the kids, I see when I go to the park or when I talk to families and I, what are you doing today? What are you going to do this afternoon? And they talk about how we're going to go to the park and we're going to go for a walk and we're going to go get ice cream. Like they're doing it as a family. And I think that the role modeling in terms of the parents going with the kids and getting their bikes out and going for a walk or taking a ball to the park or just even if it's we're going to get ice cream but we're going to walk there, I think that that's a great way to model it and to be involved where, you know, you're enjoying each other's time as a family. You're having that conversation. You know, what did you do? How was school? What projects are happening? But you're getting exercise at the same time. I also have found that there's been some parents in that swim club that I was telling you about, the adult swim club, and some of them are bringing their teenage kids with them. And so they're in the swim club together, and they're exercising together. And that's kind of cool. So, again, if there's a way to maybe see a common, assuming that their kids want to spend time with them, you know what I mean? then that's cool. My daughter, who's 27, she did a Groupon and got three lessons to a boxing place. Well, I've never boxed in my life. And she took me and my other daughter, and the three of us spent Saturday at a boxing place. It was so much fun. And what was the most fun for me? Well, one, I felt great because I was exercising. But two, I was with my daughters. And they're growing women. But we had a great time. And I give kudos to my other daughter because she knows, and she would be the one at our overnight camp to say, you know, this cabin's going biking. I think they would love to have the camp director go biking with them. And I would go biking with them. And it's like, I almost had to put it in my schedule to go to do these activities with the kids because I can easily get caught up in the office also. So I don't know. I think that that's one. And I think that you also don't want to overprogram your kids either, but pick something where if it's swimming, it's a life skill, but it's also exercise. Maybe there's something else, like soccer in the spring, and you're getting that running endurance type of thing. Maybe you're skating in the winter. Maybe you're just, you know, maybe there's something at school that you can be involved in. I know my nephew is on the track field, the track and field team, and he loves to run, and he just is running nonstop in the fall. Well, it's track season, and that's amazing. And he's a kid who will bring his iPad over for dinner and barely look up from the table because his parents won't take away his iPad. I'm just the aunt. But when I hear that he's at least on the track and field team and he's running, I'm like thrilled. So I don't know. Those are just some suggestions.
So your two main, or I heard actually three, which is one, do something together with
mm-hmm.
your kids. Two, make sure it's fun to do,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you really emphasize with all your counselors, all your staff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just remember that this is for the kids. They want to just have fun.
Mm.
And I think you do a really good job sending that message across. And the third thing here was don't overload your kids with different activities. And I think that's really sound advice because sometimes you can get, you know, as a parent, you want your kids to be busy and we'll say kind of stay out of trouble and learn
mm.
skills. So sometimes it's like Monday you have math tutoring, Tuesday you have swimming, Wednesday you have martial arts, and the list can just go on all the way to the end of the week. Sometimes, you know, maybe what you're saying is just spending time with them, taking that hour to just head to the park or get ice cream together, something like that, right?
No, for sure. And I think also, you know, if there is something that you're passionate about, or you're, and you may not know what your kid's going to be passionate about without exposing them to different things. But just like you were passionate, you know, and you found sort of this spark with martial arts and I did with swimming, if there is something out there that your child can potentially pursue, you know, to different degrees and love it, and it offers a discipline and a time management, and still they're getting the fitness aspect of it too, then definitely run with that as well, because there's so many other aspects to being involved in something where you're committed to, whether it's a regular program once a week or whether it's on a higher scale where maybe you're part of more of a elite team where you're practicing more and it's 10 hours or 20 hours a week. But I do hire some of these staff who are on competitive teams, and they're practicing anywhere between 10 and 15 hours a week. They have their schoolwork, they have their assignments, they have a part-time job, and they're the ones that are managing it all because they've learned how to time manage and they learned how to prioritize. And my hat goes off to them, because I'm also dealing with too many parents who won't let their kids work 2 hours a week because what? They have to get better marks for high, like for university. Like, it's 2 hours once a week to teach. You're making money, you're building your resume, you're building loyalty, you're building life skills. I have trouble with a parent saying that their kid can't work for 2 weeks when they're in grade 12.
I don't know if I get my parents in trouble for this, but I started working for them when I was 9 years old, and I was their only employee until I was almost 30 myself. So yeah, you definitely make time and get the grades and do all that stuff. I was one of those kids that I was one of those overloaded schedules. I had two things after school that I would have to do, like math and piano and swimming and martial arts. And, you know, I definitely did feel the overload as a child, but I think my mom and my dad, that's the way it needs to be done. And, you know, kudos to them for trying, because that was, you know, they were entrepreneurs themselves and they were working 12 hour days, 14 hour days, and still somehow was able to drive me around and cook dinner for us and snacks.
They were role models for you also. That's huge.
Absolutely.
And then you saw what they did for you, and you're doing that for your kids, and you're an entrepreneur, and I think there's something to be said about that. My parents were entrepreneurs also, and I think it can be done. It can be done.
It can be done with just a little bit of effort, a little bit of love, and some time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, Ellen, I really appreciate you coming on the show today. You gave so much value. Is there anything that you'd like the listeners to know about, or you have a last lasting message out there for them?
What you do in terms of kids and adults, I mean, we're just out to really give your kids life skills, life opportunities that they can carry on at any age. And I truly believe that you've got to expose your kids and not to give up, whether it's swimming, whether it's martial arts, whether it's soccer. You don't, when I say don't give up, I mean, okay, I had a daughter who played baseball, but she sat on the baseball diamond the whole time. You know what I mean? Like, because she wasn't into it. But we tried it. There's so many things out there. Get your kids exposed and to try and see what ends up sparking them, and giving them opportunities to meet people and talk to people and have relationships and make connections, because of technology so much getting in the way, that being part of something that's athletic and fitness related and life skill related is going to help you with the relationship aspect of connecting with people and developing relationships. And I think that that's lifelong, and it's just so important. And I think parents have a responsibility in whatever way they can to try to make that happen. It doesn't have to cost a lot of money, and there's ways to get sort of that message across and help starting to instill that type of value system and philosophy. That's where I'm coming from, and that's what I have to say to end this.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Ellen.
Yeah, thanks. So great to reconnect with you, and I'm sure we'll be in touch. And yeah, let me know if there's anything else, okay?
All right. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Thank you so much. You too.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks.
I want to give a big thank you to Ellen Howard for taking the time to come and speak with me today. I wish her and everyone at the Zodiac family an amazing summer this year. If you want to get in touch with Ellen and Zodiac, visit zodiackids.ca. That's ZODICKIDS.ca. I'll be putting up all the links, some tips from the show, and Dave's bodyweight workout at remixmyfitness.com, so go and check that out. I'll be back this Thursday with Dave Stewart as he continues his online journey with me. So, until next time, peace.